This is Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence, your 8:03 tee time every Sunday morning on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. Be a part of the show by tweeting Matthew at RealLauro5. Backspin Golf is brought to you by French Lick Resort and Casino, Men O' War Golf, Lexington Parks and Recreation, Clark's Pump and Shop, and Dan Cummins of Paris and Georgetown. Now let's join your host, Matthew Lawrence, for Backspin Golf.
Good morning. Come on, people, get up. Get up. Good morning. Welcome to Backspin Golf here on ESPN Sports Radio 1392.5. You know, there's something going on in golf now. Actually, it's been going on for a while with certain people. And we're going to talk about it this morning. And as always, to start off the show, the guy I can't do it without. I'm sorry, I'm a little emotional this morning. I'm just so happy that he's with me and has been with me. Has been with me for most of this Backspin Golf run. Of course, I'm speaking of Perry French. Perry French, who is now known by two names by everybody, in at least in Lexington.
Yes.
Hi, yes. Perry French. Perry French.
Good morning, Matthew Lawrence. Matthew Lawrence. Yes.
Hey, Perry French. Perry French. Yeah. How did that start? I don't even remember the first time I ever said that.
It's been so long. I think we both forgot how it started, but you've stuck with it, so. Well,
it's not only me, it's other people. I mean, when I talk to somebody about the show, and it happens quite often, because I can tell you that golfers in this area that listen to Backspin really enjoy it every Sunday morning. And I'll be in Kroger and I'll be talking to some guy and he said, "How did you and Perry French meet?" I'll go, okay. So it's out there. How are you?
I'm great. It's the weather's amazing, and golf is still at a high level. I was just talking to Sean before. It's amazing how it has not slowed down.
Yep.
The weather's been a good contributor to that, but you know, nothing's changing in our social world. So it remains one of the best things you can do with your time and get out, and people are taking complete advantage of it, whatever their work situation is or not. Then all the golf courses are continuing just to be very busy, and that's a good thing. And I was saying that, and they're also losing a lot of golf balls, so that's good for us in the golf sales business. So, play more golf.
Yep, play more golf, find more ball. Okay, here's a question I just thought of. When you are out playing and you have a golf bag filled with the incredible Srixon golf balls, which so many pros play, by the way. You know, the Z-Star, the Q-Star, all of them. There are different kinds. When you're out there, and be honest with me, do you ever just take three or four balls and throw them kind of in the rough so people find them? Be honest.
I haven't done that. I've heard some funny sales stories where guys would do that, throw some out.
It's a good idea, though.
It's a great seating. That's the number one way most people choose to buy a golf ball or continue to play, is they find it, and then they put it in their bag and go, "Oh, that was pretty good. I think I'll go," you know, until they run out of them. But when I do play, if I happen to hit one a little errant, or if I'm maybe practicing, I'll just go ahead and leave it out there, just because.
Okay.
As the industry, as we say, we're making more of those as we speak. So let's just let it sit out there. So yeah,
okay.
I do that. Yeah.
Yeah, but I have to say, for me, of course, I very rarely miss a fairway. Very rarely.
Sure.
So it, on the odd chance that it does happen, I seem to find like 14-year-old Max Fly balls that are cut. I go, "Oh, here's a ball," and I pick it up, and then I just have to drop it back in there.
Yeah.
But maybe I can start finding some. Maybe I'll miss fairways more often and start looking for some Srixon balls out there.
There you go.
That's what I'll do. It's a good excuse. I'm just looking for balls. Okay. All right. here's what I want to start with you today. Last weekend, Sergio Garcia, for the first time in quite a long time, won a PGA Tour event. Yeah. And it was great to see. His post-round interview, he was very emotional. He has lost two of his uncles, I believe, to COVID. None of us knew that, and all that came out. But the big story was that he putted with his eyes closed. And he put his putting is what's been holding him back. His iron play has still been really great. I want you to talk to all of us about this whole putting with your eyes closed deal.
Well, it's a real thing. A lot more pros do it in practice than is talked about. I've done it. I've taught and used that as a way to get someone to try to basically take the hit out of the putt. And that's where most people who struggle with putting, and I kind of liken it back to a lot of things athletically that you do, but with putting, you're seeing the putter come into the ball at a very slow pace, much not unlike hitting a full swing. You know, you're trying to create speed, so you're not really able to see it or even trying to see it. You're just trying to create speed and balance. But with putting, you're actually, especially when you're talking about short putts, and that's where people get the yips, you know, and the ball gets pushed and it gets shoved and the putter starts wavering. And so I always look at it, it's the mind's eye is anticipating the contact of the club against the ball. So that's where players who struggle with confidence and they decelerate, they slow the putter down, or they do. Some people actually have the affliction where they actually, you know, their hands twitch or things of that nature. So if you think about this, first of all, blind people can play golf. It's a static ball. There's nothing moving. You don't have to be trying to anticipate where it's going to be. It's in that spot. So the golf swing is to create a motion that actually travels through the same area every time consistently, whether you're hitting a pitching wedge, a driver, or a putt. And when you get that sensation of swing, you can do it, close your eyes, and make a full swing. You can hit a golf ball. Why? It's because it's not moving. You have to create a balanced motion that the club continues to travel through the same area. Well, with putting, it's really more so about that feel that they talk about. How do you get feel? And so when you close your eyes, you can really feel the motion of your shoulders, and you don't watch your hands, and you don't watch where the ball is. You know where the ball is. You close your eyes, you actually kind of can almost, you know, visualize where it is, and as well as the putt. And so by doing that, you're teaching your mind a new sensory to work on just the stroke or the pace of the stroke. And I mean, Sergio did it on every putt. We saw Jordan Spieth back when in his heyday, he was doing what? He was looking at the hole on those 3 or 4 foot putts.
Right.
When you shoot a free throw, you know, you're looking at the target. When you throw a baseball, you're typically looking at the target. And that's what, you know, you're looking, and then you release, you know, the throw. The same thing with releasing the putt, if you will, or the swing. So it's not unusual for success to happen. And what we'll see probably over a course of time, Sergio will get back to putting with his eyes open. Okay. This is a temporary thing for him to have the confidence or the lack of confidence to actually do it in a professional tournament, let alone win. That's a pretty amazing feat, right? That he was actually making all those putts and lagging and doing all the things that it takes to win a golf tournament. I mean, he made some really, really good putts coming down the stretch. He had a couple of great shots, of course. But, you know, it's funny. People in golf, it's weird. The closer you get to the hole, the more your anxiety level jumps, right? Whether it's a chip shot or certainly as, you know, from a 30-foot putt to that 3-foot putt. And so when you can take that anxiety out and just focus on what is that motion, a lot of good things can happen. Because really, if the putter comes in square and you've lined up, you know, properly, getting the ball to roll on the line it's not that big a deal per se. But when you're trying to manipulate the putter, or you're not sure of the speed and you start making adjustments in swing, that's when you're going to have a lot of problems. And most people hit a lot of putts too hard. And I say the word hit, they don't stroke the putt. They actually hit the putt. And that's where you get variance in speed. You know, one time, oh, I'm too hard. I'm too short.
And then you decelerate.
Exactly. So you start compensating, and then when you start then of course, you know, we're putting is pretty challenging. You get on these golf courses with slopes and breaks and different speeds. You have to have that innate sense to really get a sense for what the putt speed is required. And by closing your eyes, it's a great practice drill. I would encourage anybody who has any issues putting from whether it started, you know, start at 5 feet. Listen for the ball to go in the hole. We've heard players talk about that. Don't move your head until you hear the ball fall in the hole, right? It's a common practice for people to focus on, because if you move your head just a little bit, it'll cause the club face to open or close and you're going to miss the hole. Typically, most people miss the putt from 5 feet, not because of speed, because of the alignment. They either miss the line or they push it or pull it left of the cup. So that is a great way to practice. Anybody who has any putting issues should try it. And if you can put it into where the putts really matter and trust it, it's like anything. It's just a confidence thing. And Sergio, he took it to the wall and he used it and it worked amazingly. I'll be curious to see how long he does it. I think there'll be a point in time where he will maybe gravitate back and forth certain length putts, maybe just for like Jordan Spieth did on those short putts. If you ever hit a 3 or 4 foot putt and stood over it, if you turn your head that quarter turn, you can actually look at the cup, right? You're looking at the kind of the back end of the top of the cup holder, the flag holder. And so you can just, you know, when you putt it, you won't decelerate. You will stroke towards that target, which is the cup. You know, the target is not the ball. The ball is the object. And a lot of players, you know, again, they decelerate because they're swinging to the ball, putting to the ball. And that's where you get these hits and the inconsistent speeds of the putt. So
this makes so much sense listening to you talk about it. And by the way, just a couple of examples. Lexi Thompson did this and won. But here's a really amazing one. In 2011 at the Arnold Palmer, Justin Rose switched to eyes closed putting in the middle of his round. His caddy said to him, "You just close your eyes."
Right.
He made a 10 footer for birdie on the 10th green. He putted for the 8 holes left with his eyes closed. He made 3 more birdies and an eagle. shot 31 on the back. But here's what Justin Rose said, and it's what you're talking about. Rhythm is the only thing that matters when you're putting under pressure. And simply by having your eyes closed, you clock into that rhythm. You can't see, so you really use your feel instinct. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what you're talking about. It's really – I can't wait to play and do this. I can't.
It takes – you know, when you – especially when you – you know, the last thing you do when we're putting, the last thing we do is we look at the line that we want to putt on, whether it's, a little bit to the left or right of the hole, or we look at the cup to get that last – burn that last memory of what we're seeing as the distance, right?
Right.
You know, you can't measure a 15-foot putt by moving the putter 2 inches back and 2 inches through. That's not the way putting's done. It's based on the pace of the putter and, of course, the slope and the pace of the green. So you have to adjust this hole to hole, golf course to golf course, putt to putt. There's no two putts the same in the course of a round, okay? It's just as great as they maintain golf courses that the tour players play on, there's still going to be all those variables every time you hit a putt. So then every day the pins change, right? So you're not going to have the same putt. They try to practice in the practice rounds and go to certain zones. Mostly they're trying to get the read of the green and how much slope there is and, you know, if it's really moving off left or right, you know, specifically. That's what they're looking for. But when you're playing, it's a matter of it's confidence and really it's a matter of not being afraid, you know, not being afraid to make the complete motion and keep the putter moving at an even pace. Phil Mickelson, one of the best, one of my early golf pro days, I was in Houston. I was actually I was officiating in the NCAA tournament that Phil played in, and I actually was on the second holes where I was at, and I was at the green, and he was literally, he came up and he hit about a 40-foot putt to about a foot. It was a great putt. But what I noticed most from up close and personal, standing about 15 feet from him, was how the putter moved at such a gliding pace. They talk about Ben Crenshaw,
when you
have the putter moving at a very even pace, that's really the key to putting well. Mickelson still does it. He misses a lot of putts because he's a little firm with his speed, but that's more of his MO. That's a Tom Watson-esque.
His aggressive stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
But his motion, if you watch the way his arms and hands move, it's very, very even tempo. I'm sure some teachers still use them, but a metronome for music, right? Pros would take it to the putting green and put it there and have it go back and forth, and they would vary the speed, right? To get the pace,
right.
To get the tempo. And that's really what this is all about. So, hey, Sergio found the long standing issue for anybody. If you don't see the putter hit the ball, you won't change the pace of your stroke. And
right.
that's the
right.
key thing. You won't put it into it. And some people have it with hitting the golf balls. It's the same thing. You've just got to keep moving through it. You can't try to guide the ball down the fairway. You've got to
swing. That's me.
You got to let it go. And if you, you get the tempo going, the ball goes. You can't hit the ball straight. You can swing it and the ball will go straight.
Right. Right.
You try to hit the ball straight. It's like throwing a pitch. You can't aim. You've got to throw it. You got to let it go.
See? I'm psyched right now.
I like it. Yeah. I like to get you fired up.
Yeah, you did. Because as you know, I've said this before, a big part of my entire golf game is based on fear. it sounds funny, I've always been that way. Rather than I'm going to pipe this ball down the middle of the fairway, my fear is don't hit it right, don't hit it left.
Exactly.
And so you try to guide it, and this is the clearest indication of something you can work on to get rid of that fear.
Right.
Is this putting with your eyes closed?
Yeah, I think it's a great solution. Looking at the cups, another solution too. So
yeah.
You can find if you notice when he putted, they had a great close up. I got 15 of the last round, and of course he makes two birdies coming in to win the tournament. But
right.
His eyes were closed when he started the stroke, and the minute he stroked it, he opened his eyes.
Yeah.
Okay. So he was, when the impact occurred, he opened his eyes to look at it. He didn't keep his eyes closed the entire duration. But
right.
if you think about it, that's a 30-foot putt. There's going to be some time for it to get to the hole. He wants
right.
to watch it. He wants to see the break. So if he
right.
misses the putt, he has an idea of what the next putt's going to look like.
Correct.
But when you're talking three or four footers, do it that way and wait, listen for the ball to go in the hole.
Okay. Well, we will, I'm going to do this and hopefully I'll be able to play this week sometime.
Yeah. Okay, good.
And I'll report on what happened on next week's show.
Sounds good.
All right. Hi, Chris Mascaro.
Hi, Chris.
Next on the tee. Best one out there. Go to podbean.com. Talk to you next week, Perry French.
All right. See you.
Thanks, man.
All right, man. Bye.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Man O' War Golf, the golf improvement experts.
Welcome back. It is Backspin Golf on ESPN Sports Radio, 1392.5 on this fine Sunday morning. Joining me now, whenever he's joined us in the past, I always say the same thing. He is a legend. He is one of the iconic media representatives in not only the golf industry, golf media, but in sports media in general. Friend to many other legends such as himself. And I'm honored and humbled every time. Is this too much, John Patrick? Is it too much? Or just
you have no idea.
But you would let me keep going.
Absolutely.
It's kind of cool. Yeah. John Patrick of the Augusta Golf Show joining us this morning. But,
wow.
You know, I 90% mean all of, well, 99% mean all of that. I mean, you're the beacon of light that we all aspire to be. Holy crap. Wow, that was really good.
You even dangled a participle there.
Oh, I do that.
To which we all aspire, Matthew.
Oh, good. How are you doing down there?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fine. We're all healthy. That's what matters right now.
That's a good point. Have you been sick at all through this?
No, thank God.
I haven't either. And I wonder if that's because, you know, we're all taking these precautions. You know, and I wonder if that's contributed to, you don't want to get that disease, but I've gotten, oh gosh, I shouldn't say this. I've had none of it. And I wonder if that's because, you know, we're all wearing masks and we're all washing hands and we're all distancing and maybe.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had this discussion yesterday with somebody very close to me, and that was what we talked about. I mean, anyway, and while we're at the subject, get a flu shot, everybody. While we're on this subject,
I got mine a month ago.
Good boy, atta baby. Me too.
And who's close to you, by the way?
You know, that's a fair question.
Thank you.
Are you talking physically?
No,
close
no.
To me
or, I just no. I am unaware of anybody who's really close to you.
Well, no, that's not fair. My brother Mitchie is close to me. Nobody else but my brother Mitchie and Sean. Sean's close to me. I mean, anyway, that's another discussion. Okay, so there you are. It is, what month is it? October.
Mm.
And shockingly, coming up in, you know, about a month is the Masters. What? By the way, what year? I guess it'll be the 2020 Masters still.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And then the next major that we have is the Masters.
Yeah.
In April. And you, who for, oh, this is a good segue. How long have you been doing the Augusta Golf Show?
The golf show? The golf show I've been doing for 12 years.
Okay. Now, before that, and the reason I'm asking this is I want you to talk about, there is some kind of rumor or something about some 40-year deal with Augusta and Augusta National. I want you to talk about that. But you've been covering the Masters for a lot longer than 12 years.
Correct.
Okay.
The first time I set foot on the grounds was 84.
Wow.
Started covering the tournament in 85.
Okay.
So the recognition to which you are speaking, I don't want to dangle a participle.
Thank you.
I know how incredibly correct you are with your grammar.
I am.
I is. About 10 years ago, 10 or 11 years ago, Billy Payne at the time created an award called the Masters Major Achievement Award. And what Billy's thought was, is he wanted to recognize and pay tribute to the media members, whether it's newspaper, television, or radio, mm-hmm. that have covered that tournament for a period of time. And Billy decided that 40 years was a good demarcation line. So 10 or 11 years ago, he instituted this award. They cut down a tree behind number 2 tee when they were lengthening number 2. And from that tree, they have created and carved plaques that the media member gets for 40 years of covering the Masters. They also get a preferred parking place near the media center.
Bingo.
And, yeah, exactly. And a couple of tickets for life.
Wow.
So that first year, you know, sort of like when you create a Hall of Fame, that first year there were a lot of people to induct.
Right.
The Dan Jenkins of the world and, mm-hmm. and all of those people. But and through the years, it's slimmer and slimmer. There aren't many folks who have done 40 of these Masters. There
right.
are years when nobody is recognized because nobody's gotten to that mark.
Mm-hmm.
This year will be my 36th, and April will be my 37th. And people have looked at me funny as I've gotten closer to 40 years, and I say to them, "Boy, I can't imagine 4 more years. I can't imagine 5 more years." And they're like, you've done the heavy lifting. And it's like, yeah, but you know, you, it's just the way the thing goes. Those people who were first recognized, you know, at the awards ceremony, they were in their 70s. You know, when do you yeah. start covering it? That's what's important. You start covering it in right. your 40s, and you have some challenges. I was lucky.
Yes, enough, you do.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to be I'm 27 when I first started covering it. So. So I've got a few more years to go. It just seems like it's a long way out there, but as they said, I've done the heavy lifting.
Yeah, you have. And it's not, you know, it's not when you think about, well, a lot's happened in the last 4 years that we won't talk about, but, you know, I think about my sons, Everett and Lee are going to be 17 and 14. Well, when they were 13 and 10, it wasn't that long ago. So it seems like it, but it's like you're at the end of the marathon, John, you know, and you've already run 22 miles in those last four, especially with Heartbreak Hill and stuff, but you can do it. And this is quite a metaphor I just came up with. And I think when you cross that finish line of this marathon, you're going to be as strong, well, maybe not as you were when you were 27, but relatively speaking, as strong as you were then. That's my feeling, because you're an icon. Do you know? You understand?
I heard that in an introduction earlier.
Recently, you've heard it. We're speaking with John Patrick at the Augusta Golf Show. Well, that it's pretty incredible. And I'm telling you, hopefully, Backspin Golf will still be around. And I will do, Sean, make a note of this. We will do the full hour with John Patrick. On that historic occasion.
You just said, what do you mean still be around? You just said it's only a scant 4 years away.
I'm talking about the golf show. I didn't mean me. I'm talking about the actual show. Because, you know, in this business, who knows? You know what I'm saying.
You think?
All right. Now, this brings me to my next topic with you. Coming up, as I said, in about a month, we have the Masters. I haven't spoken to you on the show for a little while, so you may not know. I don't ever mention his name. I either call him the Hulk or Perry French. Perry French calls him the Bulk, or I call him Briceps. Briceps, who we saw what he did last week. We saw what he did. The stuff they put on Twitter of the first round of the tournament that's going on this week was a joke. He had five eagle opportunities during that round in which he shot 62. And he has said he is going to be using a 48-inch driver at Augusta because he apparently is going to try to drive every green. I don't know. And I always think, especially when it has to do with Augusta, I always think of you first. And I'm just curious as to your thoughts about what's going on with this monster that we've created, or that he's created himself.
I'm glad you got a little more specific, because the list of people whose names you do not mention is lengthy.
Yes, it is. And all justified.
you know what I think, and I agree with most of how you feel, but I think what gets lost in some of this is how straight he hits it. I think I think he deserves credit for that.
I agree.
He's bulked up and he's hitting it, you know, goofy distances. But I don't think he gets enough credit for just how darn straight that ball goes. Because, you know, people say this on your show all the time, and people who play golf, when we hit it offline, you know, with our massive 220-yard drive.
Correct, yes.
It can go well offline. When those guys are hitting it 360, 370, offline is offline. Yeah. So I think he does deserve some credit for how straight he hits it. I'm fascinated by that part. The distance thing, I mean, it's all crazy how far Rory hits it, how far any of them hit it.
Yeah.
But the accuracy is very impressive. And if he's able to do that here,
he's going to have wedge in on every single hole.
Yeah, I mean, he'd have, we could go through the thing. He'd have to bend it around two. Yeah, he'd come close to drive three. Five would be interesting to watch. Seven, he'd come close to seven. Nine, he'd have to bend it a little bit, but 10, I'd be very curious to how close he gets to 10 green.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And 11. And then we get to 13. It's almost as if the dog leg is too short for him.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's been moved back yet. I think I've said this on the show. There's a lot of talk that eventually, probably next year, they'll move back 13T. I'd like to see them move it down and to the left. I don't necessarily want to see him move it back. I'd like to see them force the guys to go out to the right of 13 to keep it in the right side of that fairway. 14 will be interesting to see. 15 will be a circus.
Yeah. So not only for him, but those others also. Right.
Yeah. So it will be interesting to watch. You mentioned the length of his driver, and I've talked to a couple of people on the show about this, and no one really seems to buy into this, and which could quite possibly mean I'm dead wrong. I thought it was interesting how well he played out of the rough at Wingfoot, and I wonder, you know, he's got an extra long wedge, and if you think about leverage, and if you think about angles, you don't hit a 3-iron out of that rough very well, not because of the length of the club, but because of the loft of the 3-iron. But give me a 52 degree loft and the length of a 3-iron. Well, they're all 6-irons for him. The length of a 6-iron, I think he has an advantage in that sort of thing. Won't come into play here because we don't have that sort of rough. But I haven't heard a whole lot of people talk about that post Wingfoot.
Yeah. There was one, actually, I can't remember who it was, and I should have, but I had a discussion with one person. That was the first thing they said, and you didn't, as you say, you didn't hear very much from anybody else, but the first thing they said about Wingfoot was, I got a text, actually, that said, 6-iron length wedge. That's all the text said, and I knew they were talking about what you just talked about. The rough and the leverage and angle that it created that made it different for him than anybody else there. He's also, you know, and I've said this before, I don't like him. I don't like the whole, all his other stuff, but his putting and his short game, you know, have been amazing. He's still got to make those putts, even if he's only 60 yards from the green. So it bothers me. That's all. The whole thing, and
many things do. I get that. But it's also interesting to me. There isn't a swing he has. There isn't a driver swing, an iron swing, a short game shot, or his putting. Not only does it not look conventional, it doesn't look comfortable. I mean, it looks really concocted and manufactured, especially the putting. The putting just looks like, you know, he's got to work very hard at keeping the tension in his arms
at
such a low level. Nothing looks comfortable. But again, I give him all the credit in the world for how straight he hits it.
And here's the other thing I begrudgingly say. He cares not one whit about what people think, what he looks like. Every single thing about his golf game is unique, and you have to give him credit for that, because so many people obviously care about how they look while they're doing it, or all those different technique things. And he's just figured out for him what is perfect just about.
Well, you're right about that, Matthew. But he's been that way for a long time. Gentleman, the coach here at Augusta University, when they won their national championships, recruited him at SMU. And said that, you know, he's lived that way all his life with the length of his clubs. He's, since the day he started that, someone's tried to talk him out of that. He's had the spirit of his convictions since the day he went down that path. So no matter what the convictions are, he has the spirit of those convictions.
Right. Okay. And I have to admire him for that. All right. It has been great talking to you. It's always great to hear your voice. Please give the lovely Lisa a hug for me. And I'll catch up with you either before or after the Masters, if that would be all right.
That would be fine. And it's always good talking to you, Mr. Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. Patrick. Goodbye.
Bye.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Edwin Watts Golf.
Welcome back. Backspin Golf, ESPN Sports Radio, 1300 and 92.5. You know, as we've so often talked about in the last few months, really, we're all in search of things that make us feel good. There's so much bad news going around, and every day you wake up and something else happens, and we're all looking for things to latch on to, really. And here in Lexington, we all know about our great University of Kentucky men's golf program and women's golf program, I should say, but we're very proud of our men's golf program. And something happened this past week that is a national story, as it should be. And joining me now, I'm so happy, Coach Brian Craig is with us here on Backspin to talk about what happened. Hi, Coach. Good morning. Thanks so much.
Good morning, Matthew. Thanks for having me.
No, always. It's always a pleasure. We always have to assume when we're doing radio that some people might not know what we're talking about, although even if you're not a golf fan, I think in Lexington, I think you might have heard this story. But this past weekend, I sat and I watched, as all golf fans did, on the Golf Channel, a collegiate tournament from Arkansas. Can you talk a little bit about what happened with our University of Kentucky team, specifically Alex Goff and indirectly and directly Cullen Brown also?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a pretty amazing weekend. At the Blessings Golf Course, which is in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and they put on a great tournament. It was actually the men and the women playing from all 14 SEC teams. So you had 28 teams there. It was a really unique format. We all played together, which is something really unusual. You know, like we played a fivesome. You know, you saw that on TV, right?
So
they're trying to keep it in the bubble, obviously with the COVID, and so we played together. And this was the first tournament back since middle of March when everything got shut down. And, you know, a lot of people in the community know that we had a true legend, really, for even though he was 20 years old. And when I say legend, I mean in the kind of person he was and the kind of way he treated people and how talented he was. And that was Cullen Brown, who passed away for us in early August from a year-long battle with cancer. And this was the first tournament back that we'd had since Cullen, you know, had passed away, obviously. And
right.
Alex Goff carried his bag in that tournament. So we had, you know, Alex came in with Cullen. He was a freshman with Cullen. And what we did is we played 10 qualifying rounds leading into this tournament because we had so much time between school starting in this tournament. And I told the guys, Ben Fuquay, my assistant coach, actually came up with this, which I thought was brilliant, is whoever the low qualifier was would have the honor, with the permission of the Brown family, of carrying Cullen's bag in the tournament. And the Brown family was you know, overjoyed for Alex to do that because they know how much Alex loved Cullen, how much Cullen loved Alex. And so just to do that, to be honest with you, Matthew, was amazing. Just to be playing in the tournament, carrying Cullen's bag. You know, we're all wearing yellow ribbons, which is the color for the sarcoma type cancer that he had. And I say all, I mean, all 14 SEC schools plus our women's team and us, you know, everybody's
right,
pretty much wearing them. And Alex is wearing, you know, he's carrying his bag. And he goes out and he plays the most inspired, most brilliant, most honestly Cullen-like golf
Wow.
That one could imagine. And you saw it, he won it, but as you saw, it didn't happen that easily.
Yeah. Now this, I'm going to stop you here for a second. And by the way, I'm a pretty big sap, but you know, getting chills this early in the morning is not, you know, doesn't usually happen. Just talking about this, but sitting and watching those last few holes, it almost makes sense that it would end up this way. And thank God it had a good ending, but okay, continue. Tell us what happened towards the end with two or three holes to go.
All right. So, you know, to set the stage here, we're, like I said, it's 14 SEC teams. Like, this is the best, essentially the best of the best in Division I golf. Our men's golf conference is the best Division I golf conference in the land, year in, year out, hands down. I mean, it's just like football. It's just like football. And, you know, it's amazing. And some other sports, obviously, but football everybody knows about. So Alex four-putted the second hole of the first round from 20 feet. He four-putted from 20 feet in the second. So he goes two over par after two holes. And from that point until 17 in the last round, he played the best golf. I think you could put a tour player out there. You could put anybody you wanted out there. He would have been playing at that level or above, regardless who it was. It was so brilliant. It was so unbelievable. It was so flawless that it was kind of like watching just a fine athlete or a fine musician at work.
Yeah. You know,
it was amazing. So we're cruising around. We have live scoring. I'm looking at the live scoring. I'm not going to tell him anything unless he needs to know it, because that's just the agreement we had. And he's got a 7-shot lead with like three or four holes to go. He gets down to the last two holes, and he's got, I think, a 6-shot lead now with two holes to play, right? I mean, it's over. Like I could have played in, and he'd have still won at this point in time, right? Like, it's over.
Or I could have. Well, not
or maybe you could have, Matthew. Maybe. And, you know, the 17th hole is a unbelievably hard par three. I mean, it is brutal. It's playing like 220 yards. It's got a hazard left. It's a skinny green. Bunker's right. He hits it just a little bit to the left, and it hits on the edge, like literally only hit 2 yards off the green, and it kicks down in the hazard. And he could have tried to play it, but it might not have come out. So there was no reason to play it because he's got a big lead, right? So take a drop. You know, take a drop, and he should make a bogey. It's an easy up and down, and it was probably his only hiccup, really. He didn't get that ball up and down, so he makes a double bogey, right? So, still, no big deal. Now you got a 4-shot lead with one hole to
right.
play. You know, now there is a guy behind him who has a chance to make some birdies, but he's 4 shots clear of that guy, okay? And 18th hole, again, a really hard hole. I mean, this golf course is fabulous. A big shout-out to Tyson. Mr. Tyson and Tyson Chicken. This is his golf course, and it is brilliant.
Wow.
And 18, you can't miss it right because it's a hazard. So all he's got to do is keep this ball left. And if it goes in the fairway bunker, fine. But if you hit it in the hazard right, it could be a disaster. So he hits a really good tee shot straight away. It went a little further than we wanted, and it rolled into the bunker. No big deal. It's fine. It's just a normal fairway bunker shot. These bunkers are in great condition.
Yeah.
And as fate would have it, all five guys hit it in this fairway bunker on our team. All five.
Like, when I saw that, I went, wait a minute, what? What? Hold it. What? I mean,
it was
amazing. I took
a picture of it.
Yeah.
We literally had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in a row balls.
Yeah.
Like literally in a line almost.
We got about 3 minutes, Coach.
Okay.
So
he gets in there, and he's like, "Tie this one. It's my ball." And he hits it. And he just hits it to just short right of the green, perfect place, right what he wanted to do. Campbell Kramer gets in there, who's a freshman for us, good player. And he gets in there. And by now, Alex has walked 100 yards away. And he gets in there, and he goes, "This isn't my ball."
And
we went, "What?" He said, "This isn't my ball." And we went, "Oh my gosh." And we're like, "Alex, get back here." Alex comes back there. Well, Alex, they both had a tieless one. Alex has a blue line on his, and he failed to check to see that the blue line was there. And he just saw the tieless one, and he hit it.
Right.
So now it's a 2-shot penalty, right? So now it gets a little more interesting because this guy behind him still could make some birdies. So anyway, he has to now put the ball in the bunker, hit it again. Now he doesn't have as good a lie. Well, I shouldn't say put it back in there. He actually went to his correct ball in the bunker, which did not have as good a lie. He hits it now short of the green. He's got like 70 or 80 yards in, and now he's devastated because now it's like, oh my gosh. And I told him, I said, listen, man, I said, this is just a character test and you're going to pass it. And this is what we're going to do. And you still got a nice lead. And if you get this ball up and in, you're going to win this golf tournament. And if you don't get it up and in, you're still likely to win this golf tournament. Right. And so he got his focus. He hit a nice shot up there. He hit a good putt, didn't quite make it. Now we got to sit around and wait. And it's like nerve wracking. It's emotional. You think he just lost 7 shots over a few holes.
Yeah. And I can't even imagine what's going through his mind. Yeah.
It was crazy. And as it turns out, he wins by a shot. And this, you know, now I do have to correct the story, Matthew, real quick. They had the scoring wrong by accident.
Right.
Yeah. He ended up winning by 2.
Right.
But nobody knew that until well after the tournament was over. So we all thought that it was the last hole that kid 3-putted that cost him the tournament and for Alex to win.
Yeah.
And then the tears start flowing, you know, the emotions of winning for Cullen, of
and
Alex getting to, you know, pour his heart out about Cullen. It was unbelievable.
The whole thing and the fact that it was on the Golf Channel made it even more amazing because this is a story that would have been picked up because it's so great, but it would have been contained mostly, I think, around here and maybe in SEC golf cities. But the fact that it was on the Golf Channel and everybody saw it was just great. I'll catch up with you real soon, Coach. And this is a great way to start the day. Thank you so much. Thanks for the great coaching you do and the great kids we have on this team representing UK and just a great, great job. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it, Matthew. Thank you.
All right. That'll do it. Another edition of Backspin Golf in the books. Well, no books. I mean, whatever. Thanks to our incredible partners, French Lick Resort, Man of War Golf, Edwin Watts, Clark's Pump and Shop, Dan Cummins in Paris and Georgetown, NFP Insurance, and Commonwealth Credit Union. We'll be back next week for another edition of Backspin Golf, right here on ESPN Sports Radio, 1300-92.5. Coming up, The Bottom Line and The Angelo Show.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Lexington Parks and Recreation. Book your tee time at one of their 5 public courses at lexingtonky.gov. Play Golf Lexington.